Brought to you by Toyota. Let's go places. Welcome to Forward Thinking.
Hey there, everyone, and welcome to Forward Thinking, the podcast that looks at the future and says, Earth below us, drifting, falling, floating weightless, coming home. Yeah. I'm Jonathan Strickland.
I'm Lauren Vogelbaum.
I'm Joe McCormick.
Oh, we got some approval from Joe on that one.
Oh, no, usually I just scowl at you while you say song lyrics.
Yeah, you didn't like the last one at all. But today we're going to talk a little bit more about tractor beams. That's what we discussed in our last episode. But we wanted to get a little more wacky and crazy and talk about the science fiction side of tractor beams.
Yeah, because in case none of you could tell, we are all kind of fans of science fiction.
Yeah, we're nerds.
I'm not.
Get out.
Joe watches a lot of science fiction, but he does so begrudgingly with a scowl upon his face and his fist clenched in furious anger.
Well, I hate pleasure and happiness.
Yeah, that would be why. Whereas I'm actually the son of a science fiction author, so I grew up around science fiction all my life, so it was bound to seep in one way or the other. I did not rebel against my science fiction upbringing. So it is definitely part of my personality. So let's talk about tractor beams, guys.
We can see it come through in your captain's chair persona.
Yeah, where I before every podcast, I lean back and say, engage.
Bones! Yeah.
Well, now we're mixing up our captains.
Goodness gracious.
You got Kirk on my Picard.
Sorry. All right,
where does this come from? Where does this concept come from?
Possibly the very first reference to tractor beams in fiction was from something called The Skylark of Space.
Whoa, that sounds wonderful.
It was a space drama by E.E. Smith, originally serialized in 1928 and later published as a novel in 1946.
Wow. So back in the 20s, we had this concept. So as far as you know, was the tractor beam something that was designed to immobilize or bring forth something, or was it just the first mention of a tractor beam?
I cannot personally speak to that as I have not read the story. But
nor have you watched the serial?
Watched the serial? Yes. No.
Or heard the serial? Was it radio or was it movie?
It was magazine published,
oh,
I believe.
Oh, magazine serial. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
See, I'm thinking serialized because I'm thinking of the old radio
days. Oh, like serialized as in like Charles Dickens serialized.
Yeah, yeah.
Correct,
so,
yeah.
So even more so.
Not like The Shadow.
I was getting a little too science fiction-y for it.
You were. There were no theremins that I know of involved in this particular writing.
That would be another great podcast is theremins. But okay,
so wait a minute. What was that year? How early did we have tractor beams in fiction?
1928.
That's earlier than I would have thought.
But without having read the serial, obviously we can't be sure that the tractor beam in that is the same thing we think of in science fiction today. Probably was. Just seems like it's the kind of concept that would carry over into future incarnations in science fiction. This whole notion of I'm in space. I've got this big old spacecraft that I'm in. There's something coming at me that I want to move out of the way and not necessarily blow up, or I want to bring it into my spacecraft. How do I do that? I capture it with energy, and then I pull it in using my tractor beam, which is really just shorthand for a magical thing that makes stuff behave the way I want it to.
Did you realize while you were talking there, you almost for a second had a Scotty accent?
Did I?
Yeah, almost for a second.
Well, I was
Scotty.
Giving it all it she got.
Like, you capture it. You know, I didn't. That was horrible.
I can't do a Scotty accent, so I'm not even going to try.
Okay. Well, who was it that operated the Star Trek tractor
beam? Let's not get into Star Trek
okay,
yet.
We're going to move
into Star Trek. Yeah, I want to talk about Star Wars.
Star Wars?
Yeah, you've got some info on Star Wars and tractor beams, right?
Well, Star Wars was the first place I ever heard about a tractor beam.
So you're talking about Star Wars Episode 4, A New Hope?
Right.
The one that was originally called Star Wars?
Uh-huh. I love how...
1977?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, the actual first one.
Gotcha.
Yeah. I loved how they don't really explain what it is.
Right. You know it's something that the Millennium Falcon gets trapped in.
We're caught
in
a tractor beam. They're pulling us in.
Yeah, and it's the Death Star that has the Millennium Falcon in a tractor beam.
So yeah, they arrive. That's no moon. And then they get sucked into the docking bay.
Right.
Turns out that the size of the Death Star that you see sucking in the Millennium Falcon, and actually, before that, I think a Star Destroyer sucks in Princess Leia's ship too, doesn't it?
Well, you certainly see the Star Destroyer take the Corellian freighter.
Mm-hmm.
That is, yeah. Actually, it's not a freighter. It's a Corellian.
A blockade runner.
Yeah. Actually, I think they call it a Corvette in that. It's a Corvette. It is a blockade runner. They take that into the docking bay, but they don't actually say that it was caught in a tractor beam, I don't think. Maybe C-3PO does.
I can't remember. Well, in any case, you'd later be led to assume that, right?
Right.
Because obviously I doubt that the ship just, well, I'm going to go park up in this other ship here.
Or that
seems
other
unlikely.
Ship.
Yeah.
Or the other ship is, we have exactly matched the trajectory and, uh-huh. and
like
and
they had a really
speed.
Bad pilot. You know?
Yeah, we were able to just scoop it up like it was a net for a fish.
Accidentally parallel parking in space.
We're getting away
Empire.
From that. Sorry.
Sorry. Okay, tractor beams. Well, I wonder how... Star Wars fans, because obviously the movies never explain. I wonder how
right.
Star Wars fans have explained how the tractor beams work, because there's a lot of filling out of the technical canon.
Sure,
sure.
Especially through the non-canon media of all of the video games
the
and
extended
books
universe.
And right.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So everything in Star Wars essentially gets explained away in the extended universe, not just tractor beams. Everything from hyperspace to lightsabers to even how the Force works, which we got some more information on in episode one with the whole midichlorians thing, but
yeah, we don't need to go into that.
Okay. All right.
I have here a selection of crowdsourced wisdom from ye old Wookiepedia.
Yeah.
Wookiepedia.
Wookiepedia, mm-hmm. The Star Wars themed wiki.
Okay. And this is from their article on tractor beams.
Okay.
I'm going to read. So in the Star Wars universe, a tractor beam was a projected force field used by spaceports, planetary bases, space stations, and starships to effectively grasp and guide vessels to a safe designated landing. They could also be used to forcibly capture enemy ships. The first Death Star was equipped with 768 tractor beam generators, enabling it to constrain ships such as the Millennium Falcon with ease. That's from the overview, and now I'm going to read the technical description section.
Please do.
Okay. Technical description. A human being wrote this. a tractor beam relied on the inertia of the craft it was based upon as compared to the craft being affected. Now, I think that's interesting. I'm going to come back to that in
yeah.
a second.
Yeah, okay.
Ships with high inertia, typically meaning high mass, could affect smaller vessels with little strain on their own propulsion. Capital ships could tractor small freighters, for example, but if a freighter attempted... to tractor a capital ship, it would actually affect the smaller freighter's trajectory. For two ships of roughly equal size, the attraction was equal, but could be affected by the relative speeds of the two vessels.
Gotcha.
So
you're talking about mass and speed. You're really talking about momentum here.
Yeah.
And so if the momentum of one body is greater than the other, then the tractor beam would affect the smaller, the less massive, less fast of the two objects more than the other one.
So it's kind of talking almost about like a controlled orbit effect.
Almost, yeah. Mm. Yeah, cuz I mean like now it makes sense cuz you've got the Death Star, you've got the which has an enormous mass to the point where it could be mistaken for a moon. And then you have the Millennium Falcon, which was a freighter ship and obviously much smaller. So even though the Millennium Falcon might be able to move through space far faster than the Death Star could, I don't know. Never saw the Death Star's specs on it, how fast it can make the Kessel run.
Well, we know the Death Star moved around pretty fast because it traveled between systems, right? It's
right,
like, well,
then,
we got to go to this other system to blow up the force moon.
Well, it could go
Endor,
into hyperdrive.
Hyperspace.
Hyperspace.
Yeah.
Probably.
Yeah, but even so, you still don't know how fast it can go compared to the Millennium Falcon, which as
is the fastest
hunk
ship.
Of junk
yeah.
in the galaxy. I mean, that's what they established that. That's
well,
canon.
I somewhat appreciate this technical description from Wookiepedia
uh-huh.
because honestly, I'd never thought before about how the tractor beam as depicted in fiction would affect the ship that was putting out the beam.
Right, right.
But that actually makes sense to me. Now, especially if we imagine it as something like gravity, right? Because gravity is a force that we believe to be exerted by anything that has mass.
Sure. Yeah.
And so, you know, when you're at, 5,000 feet and you're falling towards the Earth, you're getting attracted to the Earth's gravity, but the Earth is also getting attracted to your gravity,
yeah.
right? You're both exerting a force on each other. It's just that you're so much smaller, it doesn't really matter to the Earth. And the same thing is going on here with the Millennium Falcon and the Death Star.
Yeah, the gravity is – the relationship of gravity is between two bodies, their masses, and the distance between them,
mm-hmm.
right? So that's basically what you have to be concerned with gravity. So, yeah, I think this kind of makes sense in a roundabout way. I mean, obviously, they still don't explain how the force field is actually generated.
Oh, right, right. They're talking about some kind of mechanism that's creating a focus for this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so that's kind of the magical placeholder, right? And to be fair, Star Wars is more magic.
It's more fantasy than science fiction.
It's fantasy that's set in outer space, but it's really more. I know a lot of science fiction fans who would argue that Star Wars is really a fantasy film. And it doesn't, you know, they're helped by the fact that George Lucas himself has referred to it in very in fantasy-oriented ways, like calling a lightsaber a magic sword. That's very much
is.
A fantasy
yep.
trope.
Mm-hmm.
So
I agree with that interpretation. I mean, the technology in Star Wars is more like magic than science.
Right.
But I also appreciate this filling out because I think this is actually a pretty clever qualification to add to the technical view of how a tractor beam would work.
I think Lucas apologists are some of the most intelligent people when it comes to justifying very weird decisions that Lucas made when it comes to the Star Wars franchise.
That was harsh, but probably true.
I'm a huge Star Wars fan. I do this mainly because I like to ruffle feathers.
He kids because he cares.
I do.
Also, it's interesting because in the Star Wars universe, you don't see a beam of light reaching out of the ship the way that you do in, say, Star Trek.
Right, right.
Right.
And so this might be a good time to just do a quick reminder on what we talked about in our last podcast, which is that, so we actually have made some tractor beam-like setups in a few lab conditions, but they all involve light, don't they?
They involve light, and they involve objects that are on the nano or micro scale, so far, far smaller than what you would see in one of these movies.
Yeah, and also, as we discussed in the last podcast, if you were to scale up one of these laser tractor beams, it would almost certainly destroy the target.
Right,
yeah,
you would blow up Alderaan, not move.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And maybe the Death Star was just malfunctioning, like it was trying to give Alderaan a hug.
That's what Lauren said in the last podcast, and I did point out that Grand Moff Tarkin was very clear as to what the Death Star was meant to do. I didn't think that he was a man to be taken lightly. He was not someone who would just, like, JK.
He was just Joshness.
Yeah, sure. Well, all right.
But
so we've
he
talked
looks
about Star Wars.
So sweet.
we talked about Star Wars and the fact that is more or less a fantasy. Let's talk about something that's at least usually lumped more into the category of science fiction.
And
what about,
even geekier than Star Wars.
Well,
it's
a tough argument to make. But we're talking Star Trek now. So, Lauren, I know you had some info on Star Trek and its first use of the term tractor beam.
Yeah, the first time that Star Trek used it was in the original series and in episode 24, Space Seed.
Okay, so Space Seed.
God.
Oh, and this was in 1967.
So Space Seed is the episode where they introduce the character of Khan, who is one of several former warriors turned convicts who had been put into cryogenic stasis and then shot into space.
Wouldn't he like some evil eugenics experiment or something?
The idea was that it was in the eugenics wars, and they created this sort of genetically modified race of superior human beings to act as warriors. And then the warriors did their job so well as to go on to attempt to conquer large portions of Earth. So everyone else said, you know, this was a great idea for its time, but that time has passed. So let's zap them into sleep and then push them off into space, which is what they did. And so they put them in a ship called the Botany Bay.
That's the kind of thing that could only happen in the setup for a later episode.
Plan. Why would you do that?
Never hear from them again.
It was also supposed to take place in the 90s, and I think you could easily imagine in the 90s we'd say, let's just shoot them into space.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert, that did not actually happen in the 90s, for those of you who weren't paying attention. Anyway, the Botany Bay gets shot off into space. The Enterprise comes across the Botany Bay spacecraft and then decides to check it out. I mean, they're all about exploration and finding out what is this mysterious spacecraft that's out here.
Do they use a tractor beam?
They do. They do use the tractor beam in order for them to be able to get access to the ship and then find out what it is that's aboard it. And that's when they find out that it's Khan and his people. And then Khan attempts to take over the Enterprise, quite effectively at first, but he's not very good at three-dimensional thinking, as is later explored in the fantastic movie Star Trek II: The Wrath of Khan. And so ultimately Kirk and his crew end up stranding Khan on SETI Alpha 5, which was originally a lush planet filled with life, but that changed dramatically between the time of Space Seed and Star Trek II.
Maybe Khan ruined everything.
Really, it was SETI Alpha 6 that ruined everything. But
it had those horrible ear monsters.
Those were not really prevalent until Star Trek II. This is all explained early on in Star Trek II. You just weren't paying attention.
So, tractor beams. Yeah. The way that Star Trek explains tractor beams is that they are graviton force beams.
Interesting.
Gravitons, of course, being the hypothetical particle that that explains why gravity works mathematically.
Now, so am I right in thinking that at least I want to say that in Star Trek, the episodes I've watched, a tractor beam was represented by a beam of visible light, like you saw some glowy light,
or etc.
Is odd when you think that it's gravitons, which are obviously not visible because we haven't seen them.
maybe they reverse the polarity of the graviton.
Of course, they reverse the polarity.
They've
got that. I don't know why they don't just build a switch on the console that just says reverse the polarity, because that was always the number one thing they needed to do, especially if the Borg were involved.
I wonder what happens if you rotate the polarity 90 degrees.
Yeah, instead of just reversing it.
Yeah, then what are you going to do?
Yeah, you're just getting to, maybe it would only work halfway then. But it is odd that there was a visible effect there, because gravitons are not visible. If they were visible, we would know if they actually exist instead of just hypothetically exist.
Right.
Now, like you were saying, Lauren, they hypothetically exist in the sense that when you start working out the math for the way gravity behaves, then it's kind of, again, like a mathematic placeholder, as opposed to, you know, this, we need to have something here to explain how we fix this problem that we would face if we were actually in this situation. Mathematicians, physicists, scientists, they actually do use placeholders to represent an unknown quantity that must behave a certain way in order for stuff to behave the way we understand it to behave. Keeping in mind that our understanding may be faulty. So it may turn out that there isn't any such thing as a graviton. It may be that we just fundamentally misunderstand the nature of gravity. But based upon our understanding, this sort of hypothetical particle would be the agent through which gravity is working.
Right. Well, we have detected gravitational waves, which are ripples in space-time moving at the speed of light that are caused by objects, especially objects of great mass. So gravitons are the kind of logical.
Yeah, it's kind of like what we would think of as photons with light, right?
Sure.
These are the fundamental particle mm-hmm. that would it's, be
it's
the
predicted.
Agent for
it's
that.
Predicted by Einstein's theory of relativity.
So if we are able to ever actually detect and furthermore manipulate these, then something like a graviton-based tractor beam could be completely possible.
Here's something interesting that I thought of just based on what you said. So if you did have a graviton-based tractor beam, there would be some limitations on at what speed it could act, right?
Sure.
We never get a very good sense, or at least I don't, maybe y'all will disagree, from the movies and other sci-fi, of exactly what the range of a tractor beam is.
It's kind of whatever it needs to be. Yeah, if the ship needs to get away, then it gets away, and if it doesn't, then...
Yeah.
Right. So you've got, say, the Millennium Falcon is as far away from the Death Star as we are from Mars, or something like that.
Right.
If the action of a tractor beam moves at the speed of light, it might take, 14 minutes for the beam to reach the Falcon and start pulling it.
Actually, depending upon where Earth is in its orbit and where Mars
That's right.
is in
I'm
its
talking
orbit.
About a hypothetical.
So you're talking about the distance, the same distance that would have been between Earth and Mars when the Curiosity rover landed.
Right.
Yeah. Right.
That's where that number comes from.
Right. Because that changes. Exactly. A gravity beam would only behave as fast as the I guess it would propagate at the speed of light. It wouldn't be instantaneous. Now, in most of these cases, if the...
And would it weaken as it went on also?
That's another good question. Now, if it didn't weaken, then would that just mean that you'd have to pour increasing amounts of energy into the beam in order for it to have a strong enough effect. I mean, like, how do you manipulate the gravity in the first place so that you can create more gravity at wherever the tractor beam is coming out from without crushing everything that's inside the ship? Like, how do you direct the gravity so it's actually pulling another object toward it, not just increasing the gravity everywhere within that area so that, you know, you suddenly have Vulcan paste inside the Enterprise?
Well, the actual research that was done, and a lot of it, interestingly, was done in the 1960s, just a couple of years before Star Trek the original series was being filmed, was involving the vibration of piezoelectric crystals to detect and attempt to manipulate these particles.
Well, that's interesting, though. I mean, I'm really curious. Like, this is one of those moments where I wish I could jump into the future, like, 150 years, just to see if we ever figured out this graviton thing and whether or not we could actually manipulate it in any meaningful way. Because, it's really hard for me to wrap my head around it. But then again, we're talking about a part of physics that has confounded some of the most intelligent physicists out there, let alone some idiot who has a podcast. So, I mean, it's obviously I'm not surprised that it's confounded me. I want to see what the end result is very, very much, because I it would be an incredibly useful tool. It's just really hard for me to imagine how it would work. Then again, I don't think I would have imagined the actual tractor beams we talked about in our last podcast.
I kind of still can't imagine them, honestly. I've read a whole bunch about them, and I'm like, well, sure, that makes sense on a quantum physics kind of. Everything is so big, sort of. I start going all 2001 and not really understanding where I live anymore.
Whenever things get really small or really big, that's when it starts to blow my mind. You know, I can deal with the macro scale fairly well, but once you get beyond that, it's in either direction. If you go cosmological or quantum, I need to take a break and have some fruit juice.
That's when it's time to put on Genesis and lay down in the beanbag chair and just think about the universe.
Groovy. All right. Well, I think that wraps up our discussion about tractor beams. And now we're going to go listen to some... Wait.
Genesis.
Yeah. But what era Genesis?
Are you talking? Like early Genesis.
So you're talking like... You know, okay.
Like the weird stuff.
Okay. All right. Then we're cool. I was just making sure that we weren't talking like late Genesis.
What sense would that make in context of a beanbag chair in the universe?
And just all Jonathan is saying is that we already fired you last episode. We don't want to have to fire you again.
Yeah, fair point. All right, so guys, if you have any suggestions for future episodes, like you think these wackadoodles need to tackle some ridiculous science fiction, I just want to hear them talk about Firefly for like 30 minutes. Let us know. We'll do that. You can email us. Our address is fwthinking@discovery.com or go to fwthinking.com. That's where we have the blogs, the podcasts. We've got links to our social media. Get involved. Be part of this conversation. Let us know what you think, what has you excited about the future. We are excited to hear from you, and we will talk to you again really soon.
For more on this topic and the future of technology, visit forwardthinking.com. Brought to you by Toyota. Let's go places.